Today's episode is sponsored by Umore. Umore helps us better understand and uplift our mental health with instant screening, data tracking, insights, and targeted exercises. I've had the pleasure of having both co-founders on the podcast, and I really admire what they do and love their vision behind the company. Umore is the AI-powered mental well-being tracker that helps you build positive habits, change behaviors, and share your progress with friends, family, and physicians. Umore's vision is to make mental health as seamless and as accessible as possible. Its purpose is to act as a support and prevention tool and to provide you with the data and insights to help you develop an awareness of your current mental state and stress levels. The way it works is very simple. You download the app for free on your smartphone. You fill in a quick questionnaire that will assess how you're currently feeling, which will act as a starting point, and it will check in with you daily to track your well-being over time and so that you are able to see your progression day by day. Umore also gives you access to many evidence-based exercises which are designed to help you live your happiest and healthiest life. The goal of Umore is to be your friend, is there to help and support you in your mental health journey. And to find out more, you can check out their website at umore.app. Hey guys, welcome to Hope It Helps. Today's guest is Alex Misery. Alex is a digital transformation and sustainability expert who has worked around the world across a variety of industries. He has always had a passion for sustainability and 2 years ago launched his own company called astepback.org. that helps set organizations on a path to sustainable growth and development by focusing on 3 key areas, including climate action, education, and responsible consumption and production. During this episode, we discussed what does sustainability and sustainable development mean for organizations. We talked about the difficulty of shifting people's mindsets towards sustainability and the challenges that come along with it, and how climate change will completely reshape the future and how we live our lives. And the last message he wanted to share is to go for your dreams, be patient, and you'll be surprised at what you can achieve. Please welcome to the show, Mr. Alex Misery.
Thank you. Thanks for welcoming me.
Thank you so much for your time and for coming on the show. I really appreciate it. So Alex, me and you got connected through a mutual friend of ours, Guillaume, who I've also had on the podcast. And he's honestly been a huge advocate of the podcast and connected me with different people and had different guests on the show as well. So Guillaume, if you're watching, thank you. I appreciate it. But I was taking a look at the work you do. I think it's very interesting, the work you do in sustainability and your approach and your mindset to how organizations should work and what the future of that, you know, looks like, as they put it, building a future for all of us. So I'd love to focus on all that, how you started a step back and take a look back at some of the work you've done in the past. But before we get into everything, Alex, why don't you give all of us a little bit of background about yourself and we'll take it from there.
Okay. What shall I say? I'll say that I am the husband of a wonderful lady, the father of 3 girls, as wonderful, 9, 5, and 5. We've got twins.
Twins. Oh wow!
It always creates a reaction.
Yeah, for sure.
Either positive or negative, yeah. You know, but it always creates a reaction. And I'm French. I was born in the southeast of France. But I somehow also feel a little bit Chinese because I spent 12 years in Shanghai and 3 years in Hong Kong. And at some stage, I could say that I had spent the third of my life in China. And that still at some stage, until a few years ago, I could say that my whole professional experience was in China. So that, you know, that has an impact on someone.
For sure.
It shapes you up. And there's lots of things I love from there. Some things I'm also aware of, you know, let's say. And many things that I find somehow similar over here in the
UAE.
We can talk about it later. And always worked abroad in different parts of the world, but mostly in Asia until up until a year ago, where we moved to Dubai with my wife for her job. She initiated the move. And so all these years, what I did for most of them at least was what we call digital transformation.
Yeah.
So for the longest time, I had this digital hat. I was the digital guy helping organizations grow e-commerce, grow digital in all its aspects.
Sure.
So today, the words we use is digital transformation. This transformation part is what I love. I absolutely love helping organizations and now people also, maybe I'll talk about it, transform.
Yeah.
Take something that is not in their core activity, is not part of their life for an individual or an organization, But that thing being so important that you have to put it, or you want to put it, at the heart of your organization. For 15 years, it was digital.
Yeah.
And 2 years ago, I decided that basically I love what I did, but it was lacking meaning. What's the point? What's the meaning? Mm. How does it make my life better? How does it make the world better? What's the point of doing more and more digital, always trying to digitalize the world somehow at my very little level? What's the point? And so I decided to shift. Maybe we'll talk about it. Let's see. But I decided to shift towards sustainability.
Yeah.
So after 15 years of digital transformation, now I work in the space of sustainable transformations. Yeah. So helping people and organizations become more sustainable. I guess that's long enough for the intro.
Yeah, no, for sure. And thank you for sharing that with us. I like for myself and for the listeners to get just an idea of, you know, your experience, how you got to where you are today and so on. So I guess let's start with, now, I know you've worked in Paris, you've worked in Sydney, Shanghai, and China's probably the biggest one, and now Dubai. So what have you learned, I guess, working in so many different parts of the world from a cultural perspective? You know how everyone says in different parts of the world, people, there's different ways of doing business, there's different traditions and so on. And how, I guess, has that helped you here? And you mentioned something interesting just now, that between China, for example, and Dubai, that there's actually a lot of similarities. So I'd love to hear more about that.
The similarity, I'll start from this. The similarity or similarities is, in a way, but I won't go into details on this, is how the country is managed.
Okay.
How the country is led, governed.
Mm.
At a more maybe a practical level or day-to-day level, it's the energy, the everything is possible mindset that we had during all these years, and there still is in China, that we find here as well, that I didn't feel as strong or at all in some of the places where I lived and worked. So ultimately it's this amazing energy the city has, because all its individuals have, because the city changes so much, because you know how it always amazed me that some people who've been living here for 14 years, 15, whatever, say the city has changed so much. Sometimes I go in a neighborhood and I don't recognize it. It's exactly what we experienced in China.
Okay, interesting.
It's exactly what we experienced in China. We were there when there was the World Expo, like we have now this year in Dubai. We were in Shanghai at the time, and the city changed so much at the time. They opened 10 metro lines in 1 year.
Wow.
So it took them a few years to build, of course.
Of course.
But in the same year, before, so in 2009, before 2010, the World Expo, they opened 9 metro lines. So, you know, when I see the city here changing, it's only been a year, but some parts changing, some, you know, new neighborhoods, new parts opening, starting, it reminds me of that time. But more importantly, what I want to insist on is the energy of the people, the belief that indeed everything is possible, and the desire to go for it and make one's best life actually happen. I guess that's the main similarity.
Yeah.
Now, the other part of the question was, at least how I understood it, what did I learn from, you know, these different places?
Exactly.
I have to do a disclaimer. I believe that all humans share some commonalities.
Sure, for sure. Yeah,
we all have some things in common.
Yeah.
And somehow, probably this belief was also created because of visiting all these places and observing that indeed there are some. I don't know exactly what word to use, because if I use the word values, some people would say, but actually in some parts of the world, the value of family, for instance, or of freedom, freedom is even more, is different in another country.
For sure.
But actually, somehow, though it takes different materialization, you observe it in a different way, or it's in different parts. But in their own way, the Chinese are as free as the French, but it's in a very different way. It's not the same referential. It's not the same, you know, it's not in the same way.
Yeah, you can't compare it in the same way.
You cannot compare on the same freedom of speech. Yeah, it's very different.
Yeah, of course.
But freedom of behaving in public it's also very different this time to the benefit somehow of China, though the French would maybe be sometimes upset or astonished by how this freedom materializes. And you can go on with a long list. So I believe that there's and it's comforting for me, and it's very refreshing also to think, to observe that there are some commonalities between all of us, and that if we actually are curious enough to go towards the other, if we actually dig deep, we realize that we have actually much more in common than what separates us.
I think that's such a refreshing perspective to have, especially when you work in different parts of the world. And like you said, there might be, I guess the way I understood it from you is, people may react in different ways, they have different ways of thinking and so on, but if you strip that all away at the base of it, there's a lot of commonalities you can find with each other.
Exactly.
Yeah. But like you correctly said, you also need to be curious for me to actually find that, because it's very easy for me to sit here in Dubai and think of someone in China or in Asia or Sydney, wherever, and have a completely different, you know, perspective on them and their culture and what they do and how they work without that even ever going there.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And there are, I think, many misconceptions about every place in the world somehow.
For sure.
But at least we are in Dubai, so let me talk about Dubai. I had a number of misconceptions, judgments even, before coming, that happened to not be true. And I think the many people who have never lived in China have a perception of what it is, how it works, etc.
Yeah.
That is also not true. So when we talk about China with people who have not lived there, I always say, you know, I spent 12 years there and they were happy years. I never felt like I was in a cage, you know, I never felt like I was not free.
Yeah.
And so my perception, because I live in Shanghai and in Hong Kong, and as you might have heard, Hong Kong currently, their relationship with China is
yeah,
special.
Yeah.
And so my perspective on this is different than someone who has never been there, who doesn't know. You know, I'm a third Chinese, I sometimes say. So.
And did you you were there for 12 years? Did you actually pick up Mandarin and Cantonese or
some? Mandarin.
Enough to live,
work also for some meetings in Mandarin.
Exactly. Because I feel, because I've been to Shanghai and I've been to Hong Kong, obviously on holiday, so I didn't have the same experience that you did. But I was like, yeah, you don't have the language here, like even just getting in a taxi to try to go somewhere, it was like a nightmare. Yeah. But
well, when we arrived there at 2000, end 2004, beginning 2005, I say we because we were already together with my wife at the time. At the time, if you didn't speak a word of Mandarin, life was different. Like we thought it would be difficult, or it would be, we wouldn't be able to enjoy or live it fully.
Exactly.
So we took on Mandarin. Today, people speak English pretty, very, very well.
Really?
Oh yeah, it's quite impressive. That's every airport, hotel, a train station.
Oh wow!
Taxis, maybe they are the last ones, but they speak enough English for you to get around.
Okay. Oh, that's interesting.
Because
we were there in 08 and it wasn't like that.
And like it wasn't our like experience. That at the time, for sure.
Exactly, and there you go.
Sure.
I know you, so you mentioned that your expertise is in digital transformation and digital, both
sustainability transformation.
So when it comes to, I want to focus on the digital and then we're going to get to all that sustainability stuff. So on the digital aspect, what, If you were to explain to someone, I don't understand what digital transformation is, how would you explain that to me? And what are the challenges that, I guess, organizations typically have when making that kind of transformation?
Okay. Digital transformation is the process of helping, usually we talk about companies in that context.
Yeah, of course.
Or organizations, could be NGOs or leverage digital tools from websites to apps to data to whatever technology, piece of technology and digital and the internet at large, and put it at the service of their mission.
Okay.
And use it to grow their business, their activity, their impact. So it's basically a big word somehow to say, what do we do with the internet? how can we use data?
Yeah.
How do we improve our processes, our organization, our sales approach, our whatever?
Exactly, you
take all the departments of the company, all the activities, and think, how can we do things better, more efficiently, with more more powerfully, with more impact, to generate more revenue, et cetera, using new technologies, to say it simply.
Yeah.
It's really that simple.
Simple, yeah.
Now, in practice, it can be complex because you touch every area, every domain of the company.
And that's
one of the things I love. It's a real transformation of the whole company. One. Two, then what is the key challenge? And it's really the second point, and it's the key challenge of all of these transformations. Like I always say, adding a piece of technology can be expensive, yes. It might take a few months, a few years, yes. It's doable. It's a matter of having a project management, blah, blah, and roll out the project.
Yeah.
But basically, implementing new technology, developing new software, new hardware, and et cetera, is feasible. It's a matter of time and money. The huge challenge that all organizations face is to change the people or to change the mindsets, to change the habits.
Ah, I see.
So
okay.
The only challenge, the only deep challenge that can actually, that is the make or break, is actually on this. It's on the people front.
The people.
Because you not only want them to use the technology, but the best usage that it can make is by actually embracing it, accepting it.
Exactly.
First accepting it and then embracing it. And the point is, how can the organization invite, support, ensure that the people actually change their mindset and their behavior? And that can take years.
Exactly.
For some individuals.
I think you made a very good point about, it's not about adding a tool, not necessarily the biggest challenge is changing the mindset, because if I've done something a certain way for my whole life and now you want me to go into this new arena, which maybe I'm not very convinced about, if I'm a key stakeholder, and then there's a difference between getting the technology, like you said, and using it, but it's a completely different thing when I'm embracing this and I'm going to push that out to the rest of the organization to start doing that as well. So I think that's a very interesting point. And so, because that's going to follow up to my next question. Now with sustainability. When we talk about sustainable development and sustainable strategy, the way I've understood it is, it's about, from my research I've done, is about having an external cause being more, you know, maybe economical. I don't know exactly how to define it. How would you define sustainability and sustainable growth? What does that mean to me as an organization? What does that mean?
Okay. Sustainability for an organization is, you can say, everything that is not financial, but that is material to that organization. What does material mean? It means that is important, that has an impact.
Okay.
Health and well-being of the staff is material. It is important. If your staff are all depressed, how can the company be doing well? Impossible. If in a world where the resources are scarce, physical resources are scarce, or where the level of pollution is high, etc., the company will not be able to operate. So I take extremes.
Okay. Yeah.
But so the logic is, it's everything that is not financial, because without money you cannot operate as well, that is not financial, that is important and has an impact on the future of the company.
Okay.
So it's in three buckets. Sustainable development, if you type on it on Google and you go to Google Images, you'll see three buckets. One is environmental. So everything that happens in the environment, in nature, in the living out there, on the planet, basically, that is important for the operation of the company, short, medium, long term, depending on the type, on the company, depending on its industry, depending on For some companies, it's very, very short term, like the lack of sand in the cement industry or whatever. For some companies, it's very long term. My carbon emissions, if I continue like this, it impacts climate change. And so one day, maybe the governments will prevent us to fly. Okay, so it's very long term. So environmental, social.
Okay.
So health and well-being of the employees, for instance, is the simplest one to understand and to mention. Those are quite a number of them. And economical. And I insist on this. Sustainability, at least the way I practice it, actually in its real definition, sustainable development is a development that is respectful of nature, the environment, people, our staff, but also our societies, our communities, and economical, because if it doesn't make money in our capitalistic system, if I don't make money as an organization, even an NGO, if I don't have grants, if I don't raise funds, basically without money, nothing happens.
Nothing happens.
At least on the long run, because sustainability, and that's the interesting part of the word, it's sustainable. It means for the long time, or in time.
Got
sustainable
you.
In time.
Yeah, yeah.
You can have tremendous success, economical success as a company. On the short term without caring anything about the environment and the people.
Exactly.
On the mid to long term, we see more and more that it's not the case. It doesn't work like this. It doesn't happen. And at least it's not what I want to support.
Okay, that's actually very interesting. I've never heard anyone explain it that way, that it's everything that is not financial. I think that really helps you get an idea of it's all the things you talked about, it's everything around you, like so your society, how is this going to impact us in 5, 10, 15, 20 years, and so on, and things like, employee well-being, all these kind of things. So I think the way you described it is perfect, because when people think about sustainability, I think there is an economical aspect, which, as you said, but it's the way I've understood it from you, it's everything, yes, that is a factor, but it's pretty much everything that's not that. It's not about your revenue right now. It's the impact that you're trying to make in the long term and so on. So let me ask you a question, because I was thinking about this. Now, just like with digital transformation and now with sustainability, let's say I'm a company and you come to me and you're like, I think you guys should look at sustainable growth strategy or sustainable development. And I'm not a person, I'm not a company that's interested in that. I don't see the value of it right now, which I'm sure, you come across sometimes. I guess, how would you sell me on why is this something I should do, or why is this important to me? Because I can imagine with the work that you do, there could, like, for a certain organization, there would be some pullback surrounding that.
There are at least two parts to the answer.
Okay.
The first part is I've consciously decided not to try and convince you.
Okay.
My business is not about convincing people that they need to understand the importance of this. I'm not in the evangelization business.
I get you.
It's important for someone who works in that space to say, okay, so basically what it means is I only work with people and organizations that already have... an awareness of this topic and how important it is, that already decided or came to a conclusion like, I need to do something about it. Some people are in the inspiration business, like I call it. Now, if I were in the inspiration business, usually the people that are not convinced, usually it's because of a level of... I don't know if I should say pragmatism or if I should say cynism or where they don't think this actually matters. Okay.
Okay.
So usually these people think that I'm generalizing here.
Yeah, yeah.
If some of the people who listen recognize themselves, I'm not criticizing. It's a fact that I observe.
Yeah.
Usually they consider that what truly matters is the financial aspects.
Exactly.
So from people, planet, and profit, they focus on profit.
Yeah.
So the approach is to help them evaluate when their company, their profits, will be affected by the environmental aspects or the social aspects of things. when the sustainable development will actually have a financial impact on their company.
Gotcha.
It does happen in some industries today already. And it is possible in some cases. That's what I try to do, because I still sometimes try to do with some people, is to help them forecast in how many years. If it's more than three, I give up. Okay. But in how many years, they believe, based on reports, based on information, based on surveys, based on talking to clients, based on so many things, based on governmental regulation that are shifting, based on when their business will be impacted negatively if they don't do anything.
Yeah.
Like if I don't do anything, my business will die ultimately, you know, will be impacted negatively. I'll lose 10, 20, 50% of revenue. Or when it is time to start acting, because when I start acting, my business will be impacted positively.
Like, gotcha.
If I do nothing, I lose. But if I do something, I win.
Yeah.
So we look at both angles. And it's basically bringing it back to the P&L. So the short way of saying it is, when is there an impact of this topic on the P&L? And that's the, well, why do I say it like this and resonate like this, think like this, is because I observed 15, 20 years ago that companies did not care about digital until they realized that actually this thing had an impact on their P&L.
Gotcha.
If they didn't do something, they would lose market share, they would lose revenue. And if they did something, maybe they would at least catch up and maybe even gain something and gain market share or whatever. And it's when it becomes material, again, this word, for their P&L, that they start actually moving, that the ultimate, reluctance start moving.
Yeah, no, exactly. And I think you, the way you described it is fantastic, because number one, about, do you want, like, splitting it up into, you know, I've made a conscious decision not to do this and to not be an inspiration guy, but more to work with people who actually want to do these kind of things, because that makes a lot of sense. You know, same thing for me as a therapist. You know, I want to work with a client who wants to do this. I'm not in the job of convincing you. You don't have to. You know what I mean? So I resonated with that a lot. But also, I wanted to hear how you would sell to someone, because with things like these, and coming, this kind of relates back to the transformation we were talking about before, that you have a mindset about something. So for me to ask you to either digitally transform or start looking at sustainability as to be a part of your organization, if I don't have the mindset that fits that, it's going to be quite hard to change that. And that's where, you know, the thing, but I think you made a good point that at the end of the day, no matter what and what organization you are, if you bring it back to numbers and when it's going to hit you negatively, I think that's when everyone, you know, kind of wakes up and starts to take notice. So when it comes...
And when... Sorry to interrupt.
No, please.
Why do I say this more or less 3 years? Like if they think it will... Because you start acting as an organization if you think you need to prepare, especially if you're part of the reluctant, you know, or the laggards. Or, you start acting when you think that something is going to act to impact your P&L within the next 3 years.
Yeah.
You don't start working now on something that might impact you, or maybe will even impact you in 5 or 10 years. You don't do it.
Yeah.
Practically, you don't do it. You manage.
You have too many
one, two, 3 year down priorities. That's why I set it like this.
Okay. No, and that makes a lot of sense, because a lot of these things, I guess, might take longer for them to actually start having, like, to have a negative impact on you. Obviously, depending on the industry and the country and so on. So the whole point with sustainability, from I know, is to create a better future for all, which is one of, you know, the values that you guys aspire to. So the question I have is, because number one, why is that so important for us to put in the work now for where things are going? Obviously, there's a lot, you've heard a lot in the news about, you know, what's happening to the planet and how everything is moving. But obviously, that's still, people see it as still quite long term, so it's not going to affect them now. But number one, do you think, are we doing enough right now? And the next question is, will it ever be enough? Because you can think like, oh yeah, I am doing a lot now, but from your mindset, you'd be like, oh yeah, I could always do more. And also, how do you balance that with, like, I guess, running a profitable organization as well? Because I'm guessing some of these external factors can also, if there's too much focus on them, could start affecting revenue negatively as well.
Thank you for the question, though it's not easy. It's quite a big one. I'll answer in two ways.
Sure.
First way is try and be how can I try and be pragmatic or fact-based, or because some of it, for instance, climate change, I believe that this is one of the external forces that yeah. will change the world in the next even 20 years,
yep.
just like digital changed the world in the last 20 years. So, and I often say this, look at your life, personal, professional, whatever. Look at the world, your life, the world, 20 years ago, how it was and how it is today, and how digital changed that, okay? We probably wouldn't be doing what we're doing right now together if the world hadn't digitalized.
True.
So look at where we were and where we are. And think that, that which is my deep belief, the world will change just as much from a sustainability, but it's more specifically an environmental and even more specifically climate point of view in the next 20 years.
Yeah.
So things we maybe today cannot imagine. because 20 years ago, I didn't imagine how the world would be from a digital standpoint today. So factually, practically, especially if I take the climate angle, which is one of those that I speak most about or that motivates me most or I'm most sensitive to, there are a number of reports, there are a number of science-based observations, recommendations. There's the Paris Agreement, you know, the wealth of it, and I don't want to go into all this, but there is data for those who are interested. It does take a bit of time, or it does take to listen to the right podcast or whatever. Ultimately, it's time to get up to speed with the knowledge that is available out there, because there is today a consensus between all the scientists in the world on this environmental topic. You could say the same on the social topics. every country has its own challenges, every company, every family maybe even, has its own challenges on the social aspects. And so basically the audit, it's not exactly the word I'm looking for, the looking at the state of things.
The study, yeah, I guess.
The study. No, what I mean is looking at things as they are, or where we are in my country, or in my company, or in my, you know, looking at the status of things is something that everyone can do, should do, in their own context, because sustainability in the UAE, sustainability in China, sustainability in France, I'm French again, is a different thing.
Of course, and
from an environmental standpoint, from a social standpoint, it's different. So do your own analysis and look at where we are, where you are, and that's the second point. You just said you're a therapist, I'm a coach, I'm a trained coach, I use coaching with some of my clients. I believe in taking people where they are, and I believe in doing what we can, doing our best, and ultimately, my goal for myself and for the people I work with, I always say is to look at oneself in the mirror and say, okay, I'm good with this. I'm good with what I did. I'm good with where I am. I know I could do better. For sure, I can be much better. I could invest much better. But okay, today I did good. And if every day you say today did good, I'm happy with where I am, that this is where one needs to be. Because yes, the reports tell us, I continue with the climate topic, that the average French person living in France, should divide their consumption, which means their carbon emissions, by 9 in order to meet the Paris Agreement. Can every French on average divide their consumption, their carbon emissions by 9? I doubt so. I don't exactly see how this could happen. So, but everyone can do their best and review their life, review their carbon emission ultimately according to this. It is the same on the social side. And to make it very practical, what is the best relationship I could have with my boss, my father, whatever. I don't know if it's really possible to be in love with my boss or even my father, but actually to have a decent relationship is something I can work on. So the answer is there are benchmarks. I think it's useful, important to know, to have a reference of where should I go, or how much should I work on this. But then at the end of the day, it depends on everyone's capability, desire, situation, yeah, priorities, and we have to accept this.
Yeah.
Because there's no choice ultimately.
100%. And I love the example that you used about how you brought the coaching example into this discussion, because to look in yourself in the mirror every day and to be like, okay, I did good. And like you said, we always think as people, I could always do more. I could have answered this. I could have worked out harder. There's always better that you can do. But so when you take that into the climate change example that we were talking about, yes, there's probably always more that I can do. But if each person is at least putting in some effort to be like, okay, you know what, today I did good. Can I always do more? Could I recycle more? Could I buy less of this? Of course, of course. So it's about, I guess, just being comfortable. As long as you're putting an effort towards, I guess, the right thing, then, you know, obviously we can always do more or less. Mm-hmm. Then that's good enough, at least for now. Mm-hmm. At least for now. But maybe in the future that won't be the case.
Mm-hmm. At this stage in the conversation, I like to say that it's not something I write on the website yet, if you've been there, yeah, on my LinkedIn profile yet, because I think it would be misunderstood.
Okay.
And maybe I'm wrong, but maybe I'll get there one day. But what I do, I with individuals is easy to understand, but with companies is the same. Everything I do, I is in the purpose, the aim of sustainable fulfillment. Sustainability, we talked about it. Okay, yeah, now we understand what it is. Fulfillment. For individuals, we understand what it is to be fulfilled. We feel it. We know it. We know the concept. We don't usually apply it to organizations, to companies. And that's why I don't use the word publicly, let's say. But this is what I aim for. That teams, because companies is teams, people as teams are fulfilled. They love what they do. They love their job. They love their company. They love the impact it has. They love all of this. So they really have a deep sense of fulfillment in a sustainable way or in a sustainable context. And why do I bring this up right now is because we can always be more sustainable. And being into that world of, you know, the people who are, I'd say, trying to do their part on the climate, blah, 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 blah. So they're not activists, but, you know,
of
people who are working in that space. I see people who are actually not feeling good, like actually feeling very bad, mm-hmm, because they see the problem and they are close to depressed. Because they want to do something and they don't do enough, or because they think we are fucked up, or because, you know.
Yeah.
But even in their own life, they say, I should do more. I could do more. They always, I don't know how you say that in English, but they harm themselves ultimately,
yeah,
even,
yeah,
because of guilt or because of etc. No, I don't think that's not what I want to see. I want to see balanced, fulfilled individuals and organizations that care about themselves, and it starts from us, care about themselves, care about others, and care about the planet, and are connected to themselves, connected to others, connected to the environment, the living, the planet, call it the way you want. This balance is critical in my opinion, and evolves, and every day 1% more, every day, yeah, 1% more, every day 1% more, without guilt, without
Yeah, well, I understand what you mean when you said that you haven't posted it publicly yet, because I do get, listening to you, that how that can be misinterpreted.
Yeah.
You know, people don't really understand what you're talking about. They would actually need to literally listen to you explain it just the way you have,
exactly,
for them to get what you're talking about.
Because if I'm the CEO of a company and I see a sustainable fulfillment, I would say, okay, this is...
Exactly. But I think you made a good point about fulfillment. I think all of us at some point in our lives, whether... you ran a company or whether you're an employee, you've gone through a point in your life where you didn't feel fulfilled. But if you have experienced that feeling of fulfillment, that you do something that you love, that you're making an impact, whatever that impact might be, that you're connected, that the work you're doing is connected to what you want, it's a completely different feeling. You feel, at least I've experienced it too, you feel lighter, you're happier, you know, you don't feel as stressed usually. It's just because you know what I'm doing is connected to, this is what fulfills me, and I'm doing it, and that makes me happy. Because I used to think that, I think like many people, used to think that money is that's the goal. You know, just accumulate wealth. Money is very important. But you can have all the money in the world and not be fulfilled and be depressed. So it's just a wake up call to think about what is that thing that makes you feel fulfilled and, you know, and happy.
In Japan, they have this word called ikigai.
Ikigai, yeah.
So A-K-I-A-G-A-I.
Yeah.
For those who want to look up on Google Images, and it's exactly about this. It's the ikigai, so your best life is at the intersection of what you love. What the world needs, what you're good at, and how to make money with this. And how to make money is important.
Of course, it's a must. Absolutely.
It's part
of
sustainable 100%. Development. It's a must. But it's not the only thing.
Exactly. Yeah, and that's the thing, I guess, to remember that. It's not the only thing. I'm curious, where does your passion for sustainability come from? Is this something that you've had the whole time? Was this always the case? Or is this something quite... recent, because I know with A Step Back, you launched it in 2019 with the focus on like sustainable development and helping companies and organizations as well.
I always somehow struggle to answer this one.
Okay.
The reason is that when I was 21, I volunteered for a year for an NGO in France that serves meals to homeless people. And I did that twice a week, including on a Saturday night. My friends were thinking I was so I guess I always had this thing. I always also said that to say it bluntly, truly and simply, if the NGO world had paid better, I would have worked in NGOs for all my life.
Okay.
But I also had personal aspirations of living a life the way I did. And we have three kids. And, you know, and the one of the big issues of our world for me is that we don't focus our energy, our efforts on the right things. So which means that, you know, the NGOs, everyone says, great. Or at least social enterprises, which somehow I prefer to NGOs. Or at least sustainable organizations, organizations that take care of something else than just money, that try to do good in their world. But so I made the choice, and for many years I knew, I felt I had within me this desire to have a better impact, or a different impact at least. And it's only 2 years ago, 2.5 years ago now, that I thought, okay, for whatever reasons, my mission in the company, my digital transformation mission in the company I was working for at the time was coming to an end. We agreed that progress was great, blah, blah. We didn't need me full time on this. And so I thought, okay, so I was six or 9 months away from turning 40. I'm sure that this mattered as well, you know. and I thought, okay, I think now is the right time to address this meaning, this quest for meaning that I had inside me for years. And so I just went for it all in. And I took the Ikigai, that tool, and I built what I love, what makes sense for me, what am I good at, and I ended up creating A Step Back as a consequence.
Because
I believe that, so the reason for the name.
Yeah, I was actually going to ask you about the name, because I think it's a great name, by the way.
Thank you. I think that all change, all transformation, and I'm passionate about transformations, all change, all transformation start by taking a step back. It's when you pause, you take time, you reflect, you take a step back, that you, okay, this I like, this I don't like, this I don't like, I actually want to really change. So it's the start of all a transformational journey, and that's why the name. And some people sometimes tell me, okay, a step back, take a step back, you understand, but a step back, it's also stepping back, going backwards.
Some people understand
it that way.
Okay, interesting.
And I'm not bothered by this. On the contrary, because I believe that we are in a too, I don't know if that's English, consumeristic, that we consume too much of everything we do, in every way, we consume too much. And I think it's valuable. It would be good to reduce a little bit, take a few steps back on some topics of our consumption. And so I'm totally comfortable with that fact. Though it's not the usual message that a coach, consultant, or whoever, or anyone in that capitalistic world wants to give. Like everyone says about more, more, more. I say, no, actually less would be good.
Yeah, they do say less is more, apparently. Yeah.
But, which is what I feel, by the way, since I started this journey personally, I've transformed as well. And I feel so much more fulfilled than a few years ago, while consuming less, much, much less. And take whatever aspect of my life, I consume less.
Yeah.
And I feel so much better.
I resonate with that, actually, because so I grew up here. And here, as like culturally and society-wise, you are, this is my probably one of the biggest consumer mindsets and societies in the world, you know. Material is very important. Material things are very important, and so on.
Hong Kong and China are the same.
Oh, really? Okay, that's interesting. Yeah. But then so growing up my whole life, that was kind of my mindset. And then I lived in Amsterdam from 2017 to 2020. I was working there. And that was just like such a big like reality check. Yeah. It was so refreshing. No matter who you spoke to, no matter where they were in like society, no matter what the job was, from the coffee guy to the CEO of a business and so, and anyone in between, you speak to them and they're like, they're just happy, you know. It's simple. They don't like, yeah, this is my life, this is my family, this is what I do, and I'm very happy. And for me, it was such a big like reality check, because I'm like, I thought I need all these things. Mm-hmm. To be, you know, to be happy. And then, so when I came back, it was just like a breath of, like, it was just like a reset, like, on my mind. And I was like, oh, okay. And nowadays, compared to how I was and how I used to think, I care way less about, you know, having this, doing that, whatever. I'm like, yeah, I've got a couple of things that I need that's good. You know, I'm happy with that. Mm-hmm. So I do resonate with that. And I think, you said it beautifully. I love the name. And, you know, everything does start with taking a step back. 100%. Every change I've made in my life, every change a company has made, whatever, you got to take a step back and take a look at what's going on. Not when you're like entrenched and in the middle of it. You need to step back to get some perspective, and then you can take off from there.
And then that growth or that direction is usually more sustainable in every aspect of sustainability.
That's true, actually. Yeah, because you identify what do we need? What do we want? What is actually affecting us negatively as well? So when you remove that, you're already becoming more sustainable from that perspective. Alex, I want to be conscious of our time. I know you have a meeting, so I don't want to, you know, keep you for too long. So I just have three more questions for you. Number one, I think you'd be, if you could give what companies in the world could you maybe name that do sustainable growth well? And are there any parts of the world that you have taken notice that there's a more of a mindset of sustainability than others? Because I think understanding maybe an example of a company and where in the in a country would help people just get a better understanding of everything we've talked about today.
I think the best I can do is to invite people and go to a website. I don't know the exact address, but if you type B Corp, B-C-O-R-P,
okay,
like B Corporations,
yep.
The B Corp movement and the B Corp certification is a certification. I think today like 3,000 companies, maybe my number is outdated, but have got this certification. It's quite stringent. It's quite strict certification. Mm. It's not like you apply and you have it. Huh?
No, yeah, yeah.
It's, that is one of the most well-known and very practical certificates for companies that try and be sustainable. You've got to have a minimum of 80 points to have the certification, and every company, when they start the process and they do the first test, they have anywhere between let's say 20 and 50 points. So the maximum you can have is 200. What I'm trying to say is that it's not easy to obtain.
Yeah.
But yet some companies, the flagship company of that movement and of the whole sustainability topic, is Patagonia.
Okay.
The outdoor equipment company. There are a number of others, but why do I would like to invite your auditors to go to and check B Corp is because they will be able to find so many companies in so many industries and find one that they find inspirational.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
there are different sizes of companies now. More and more mid to large scale companies are embracing the model and trying to certify. I know of a luxury brand that is in the process. It could be the very first luxury brand that everyone knows in the process of of having it in the next few weeks if it works for them. But so yeah, I'd like to okay. reply in that way.
Sure.
And there are in every country. Literally today, I guess, a few years into the B Corp movement. I don't know if it's 3-5, right? It's at least 5 years. There are companies everywhere. Yes, in the beauty industry, there are. In the food industry, there are. So, you know, I invite the people to, yeah. to look at the industries that they care about. I guess that's the...
Sure. Yeah, I was not familiar with B Corp. Yeah.
So there are other models. If you type sustainable companies or moving towards sustainability, whatever in Google, if you make your research, you'll find other labels, other movements, a number of associations by industry as well. I was in retail for the longest time. In the fashion industry, there's a number of organizations that try to rally people onto these goals and stuff.
So for anyone interested in finding out more, getting some examples of companies, check out B Corp or sustainable growth or companies. Alex, for my last two questions, these are questions that I ask all my guests. So number one, looking back, reflecting, taking a step back, as it were, at your life or even professionally, what are you most proud of for yourself?
The first thing that came to mind is to have the courage to try and live my own life. My true life, my own life, do what I want to do with my life, because I consider we only have one. And it was not easy. It is not easy still to try and really be myself and live my own life.
And I resonate with that a lot. And actually, it's funny, many people I've had on the podcast have echoed that. I think, you know, the courage to try and to kind of create the life that you've always wanted to have and so on. And like you said, it is not easy. Sure it doesn't get
easier. But it feels so good. Now, for the first time in my life since I started the step back, when I think about what would I do if I won the lottery, or if I think about what would I do if I died 6 months from now, the answer is just about, I would do what I do now.
Yeah.
So
that's awesome. That's awesome. Mm-hmm. That's a great, great place to get to. And my last question, Alex, what is the message you'd like everyone to take home with them today?
Wow. I'll follow on the same note, probably. I didn't believe that it was possible to actually follow your dreams. I thought it was for someone else. I thought that it's in the books, or it's in some people I met. I didn't think that it was actually possible to decide and go for it and actually do it when you're someone normal, because I consider myself to be normal with my strengths and weaknesses. It's a bit cheesy, but yeah, go for your dreams and you can you actually can do it. It's crazy.
Yeah, it is it is crazy. 100%. When you were saying that, I was like, yeah, from all the books I've read and the other people who are successful, it's hard to imagine that they probably started off in similar positions as we did. You know, they were just a person who had an idea, but now you have all this, so it's like, oh, they were special. But they weren't, and they all tell you the same. They all tell you the same thing, 100%. I really resonate with that.
It does take time. There's the only maybe addition.
Yes,
and it's 100%. Not overnight success. It's not. Well, maybe for some it is, but then it's not sustainable. It does take a bit of time.
It does, for sure. But I guess that's what it's all about. Yeah. Alex, I wanted to say thank you so much for coming on the show. This has been
a great pleasure.
So much fun. I've really learned a lot about sustainability and just. I've got a fresh perspective on so many aspects of that I didn't know about before. And I think for anyone listening, if they're interested in this field, there's a lot they could take away from our conversation. So thank you. If anyone wants to get in touch with you, work with you, where can they find you? How can they get in touch?
I guess my name will be on the podcast. So Misseri, MISSERI, Alex. And the organization, so I repeat, is called A Step Back, ASTEPBACK, astepback.org. or on LinkedIn.
Or on LinkedIn. Perfect. Guys, if you want to get in touch with Alex, that's how you do it. To everyone, please subscribe to the podcast, YouTube, Instagram, Facebook. I'm all over the place. I hope that it helps. Alex, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thanks a lot for inviting me.
It's been a pleasure. And guys, to everyone listening, as always, hope it helps. Peace.